With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Westbrook, 17-footer, rattles it in. They're going to let him run to the rim. He'll score it with 1.2 left. It's 125-121, and this is the first home loss in 2021.
How about that? The Wizards handed Utah their first home loss of the season as a very short last night, Brendan, very short 10-point underdog. Yeah, it was short last night. Good morning, everybody. We got a bunch of guests on the show. You're going to hear Cooley on Justin Fields today. He did his film breakdown of Justin Fields, and I'll give you a bit of a hint. I'm not as positive as he was on Trey Lance, but he gets into the details on Justin Fields. We will play that for you a little bit later on this hour. A gentleman by the name of Kurt Badenholzen wrote a story for Sportico and Yahoo on what the economic impact was for Hideki Matsuyama by winning the Masters. It is extraordinary how much money they believe this tournament was worth to him. He's going to explain how the whole earning power from that win, being the first Japanese male to win a major championship, golf championship, will play out in his home country. He's going to join us at 7. Chris Russell will be with us at 7:30, and Tariq El-Bashir will help us break down the Caps activity yesterday, massive trade yesterday for the Caps at the trade deadline. And we will hear from Tariq at 8 a.m. and get all of the details on all of that. There were two games on last night, and I was going back and forth watching the Nats beat the Cardinals with all of their new players back. All right, you had Bell in the lineup, you had Schwarber in the lineup, you had Harrison in the lineup, you had Gomes in the lineup. Fetty pitched pretty well. And Kyle Finnegan was rolling until he gave up a solo shot to Molina in the sixth. But the Nats got a Stevenson home run and got some insurance in the eighth on a Castro RBI, which, by the way, he had a sack RBI on a deep right field flyout in the sixth inning to give him a 3-1 lead. He had a decent night, and the Nats get a 5-2 win over St. Louis in the first of three with them, and they really did look like a completely different offensive team with the new bats on the field. Kyle Schwarber, 2-for-5, and an RBI in his third at bat with runners on second and third, runners on first and second, doubled to right center, and that was a big play from him. You could see how excited he was to get his first hit and have it be an RBI for the Nats. Bell was outstanding. Harrison was good, and Gomes was 2-for-4. So you had 12 hits and 5 runs when they'd been shut out 3 times in 6 games, but they got their guys back. What was interesting last night is with all their guys back last night in the lineup, the promise of hitting Juan Soto second, they didn't do that. It was Robles, then Trey Turner, then Soto, and then Bell. Soto 3-for-4 last night. So a good night for the Nationals, and they showed you on that first night with those players back what their potential is offensively, and it's much greater than it was, obviously. They get the 5-2 win in the game. So last night, I'm not going to lie to you, I stayed up, and I was watching the Wizards. You know, I thought after the first quarter that this was going to be a game last night. I wanted to see Utah. I'm watching these games very much in the way that Susan O'Malley, many years ago as the team president, sort of sold the games, which is come watch Larry Bird. Come watch Michael Jordan. Come watch Magic Johnson. We've got room for you at the MCI Center or the Capitol Center. By the way, the fans are going to be streaming back into Capital One Arena here shortly for Caps and Wizards games. I actually have a question to ask Brendan here about whether or not the Wizards will actually fill up their allotted capacity here in a moment. Anyway, man, the Wizards gave up 17 points to Donovan Mitchell in a 42-point first quarter. You know, typical of them. I mean, they give up 40-point quarters all the time. They're a terrible defensive team. But man, did they respond in the second quarter. Beal and Westbrook were outstanding last night. And what they did more than anything else in this win last night, Brendan, is they protected the basketball. There were three combined turnovers between Westbrook and Beal. Beal didn't have one turnover in the game. Had 34 points on 14 to 31 from the floor. He missed some key free throws at the end and then made two key free throws. But they had a massive lead and almost blew it late. But Westbrook, another triple-double, 25, 14, and 14, and only three turnovers, and he made free throws last night. He was 9 for 11. And so the Wizards, by the way, they got another good effort from Gafford. I'm telling you, this guy, this acquisition, may be their best acquisition in a few years in terms of these secondary trades. Gafford is a ridiculous high-level athlete. You know, we talked about his per-minute numbers, his per-36-minute numbers. Last night, in 18 minutes, 15 points, 4 rebounds, a steal. He was 6 of 8 from the floor, 3 for 4 from the free throw line. By the way, I thought Ish Smith was outstanding last night as well. They held on to win. They held on to win again in a game in which, it's funny in watching this, it's not that I was rooting for them to lose by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a massive Wizards fan, have been my entire life. But as I'm watching, they had an 11-point lead, 13-point lead with about 3.5 to go. It was an 11-point lead with just around 3 to go. And then all of a sudden, here comes Utah, you know, coming back. They were down at one point, I think it was 7 with a minute to go. And here comes Utah, and they've got a chance as Beal misses two free throws at 121-117. And they had a chance, but they never had the ball with a chance to tie. Neto made a couple of big free throws, and Beal had another chance to redeem himself and made two free throws. And the two he missed, man, they were bad misses. But that's unbelievable. The Jazz are 40-14, had not lost at home, and the Wizards beat the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City after falling behind early and giving up 42 points in the game. Speaking of 42, that's how many Donovan Mitchell had for the Jazz. You know, where does that place them in the standings? I didn't even look to see if they gained any ground in the standings last night. From 10th, they're just two games back. They're just two games out of the playoff race in terms of being in that 7 through 10 play-in opportunity. They're just two games back. Look, they are capable offensively. They can score. They just can't stop anybody when it matters. I do not, by the way, Brendan, I do not expect to see the Utah Jazz in the NBA Finals. I think that there are, you know, certainly two teams in the West that can beat the Jazz in a best of seven. Obviously, the Lakers healthy when they get healthy. And the Lakers, regardless of where they're seated, if they're healthy when the playoffs start, they're going to be a slight favorite to get to the NBA Finals and win it. They'll certainly be a slight favorite to get to the NBA Finals. And I think the Clippers can beat the Jazz in a best of seven as well. I think Utah's very good. I don't think that they're better than the Clippers or Lakers healthy with everybody playing without any sort of minutes restriction, which is what the Clippers do occasionally with Paul George and with Kawhi Leonard. Do you agree with me on that or not?
I would like to see the Jazz in the finals, but I'm with you in the fact that they won't make it. There's just, I mean, the Lakers are if they get everybody healthy, and they should soon, they're just a juggernaut. And I just don't see how a Donovan Mitchell-led team is going to get by LeBron and Anthony Davis. It's tough.
Do you agree with me on the Clippers, that they wouldn't beat the Clippers in a best of seven?
I do, because I think Kawhi's defense is still good enough where they can shut down Donovan Mitchell. Well, not shut him down, but contain him a little bit. So I'm with you. They're probably the third favorite to get there. I don't think it's impossible, but I mean, they're so far. They're just behind the LA teams.
And if for those of you that are following the NBA, and I know it's a limited portion of the listening audience here at 6:09 a.m., on a Tuesday morning. I'm not mentioning the Suns, but I actually should mention the Suns because I like the way their team is constructed. I'm a massive Chris Paul fan, especially in the playoffs. I think that the IQ of Chris Paul, the competitiveness of Chris Paul, you know, that they're going to be formidable in a best of seven against anybody. I like their team. Obviously, with Booker, they can score. That backcourt with Paul and Booker is going to be very good in the postseason. With Ayton and Bridges and Crowder, and who do they have coming off the bench? I forget. But I like that team a little bit. The West is really, really loaded at the top. And the Wizards just beat the team with the best record and handed them their first home loss. It's funny, I did not bet the Wizards last night. I bet the Mavericks last night. That did not work. There you go for Joseph. I think it's Joseph F. or whatever, who says, I never talk about my gambling losses. Actually, I think I've talked over the years much more about my gambling losses than my wins. so I think that is an inaccurate accusation. But last night, I love the Mavericks catching a very short number against Philadelphia. They got blown out, and I really thought about the Wizards. They were 13.5-point dogs against Phoenix on Saturday night, and they were only 10-point dogs last night against Utah. I thought that was a little bit weird. I thought they were sort of begging you to bet Utah, but I didn't do it because it's the Wizards. Anyway, we got a lot to get to. I want to start with a quick, what do you got?
All right. What do you got?
All right, so it became official, I guess, the other day that a limited number of fans will be allowed into Capital One Arena. After Hayden in Virginia stood outside of Nats Park screaming at Mayor Bowser to open up the park and open up the arenas in town, apparently his activism got some results. The crowds will be capped at 10% in the indoor arena for the Caps and the Wizards games. All right, 10% equals roughly 2,100 fans. That'll be for the rest of both team seasons, and that includes, I believe, the postseason at this point, and that would be obviously much more for the Capitals than for the Wizards. My question to you, Brendan, because I had a friend of mine text me last night and say, do you see this story that it's, you know, 2,100 fans, 10%? Do you think the Wizards will pack the house with 2,100? And I said, no, they won't. They won't pack the house. But it's not going to be because, it's in part because they're not very good. But the Nats allowed 5,000 for opening night. And the second day doubleheader, and they didn't fill their 5,000 requirement. This is going to be, to me, an indication of what is ahead of us. We're not going to see lock sellouts anymore. It's going to take a couple of years for many people to recover from the fear that they've had for the last year. And they're going to choose to watch games at home without a mask, on 65-inch, you know, 4K televisions, and not be exposed to anything. I think that this is the future. But on the question of the Wizards, by the way, I do think the Caps fans are so passionate. You got 30, 40,000 Caps fans in this town that are just, they'll be fighting over those 2,100 tickets. So I think they will sell out every single one of those games. The Wizards may have like 1,900 for their first game at home.
I mean, that seems a little high.
You think it's high?
Yeah. I really mean, it's like, There, like, there are some teams that have fans open, and I saw that there were like 500 people at a game.
What about the first game at home? Who is their first? Oh, you know who their first game at home is? It's this Friday night against New Orleans.
I imagine that might get 2,100 people.
That might get 2,100. The Detroit game on Saturday night may only get to half capacity. It might only get to, you know, 1050. I can't imagine being interested in going down. I wish them the best of luck, and I want, you know, I'm a big, you know, Russell Westbrook fan from many years back, and I would have, had this been a normal year, I would have been to probably two games at this point. I never go to Wizards games as a media member, haven't for years. I go as a fan, and I'll go to 3-4 games a year, and then if they're in the postseason, I'll go to many of those games. But I don't have any interest in going down there. But I'm glad, you know, this is important for Ted. It's important for Monumental. It's important for everybody. And I don't know what 2,110%. I don't know how it was received. You know, in truth by Ted. I'm sure they were looking for more. You know, it's better than nothing right now. Indoors is obviously dicey. I don't know why outdoors, if you're fully vaccinated, they wouldn't allow a lot more into Nats Park. I want to get to, when we return, I want to get to a story that was in The Athletic on the Philadelphia Eagles and some of the turmoil that they've been through here recently. And then you'll hear Chris Cooley's film breakdown of Justin Fields. We played for you on yesterday's show his breakdown of Trey Lance, which, if you missed it, because it was in our first hour of the show, you can go to the team980.com or you can download the Odyssey app and you can go back and listen to it. He likes Trey Lance a lot. Justin Fields, Brendan and I yesterday talked about Justin Fields. I like Justin Fields. I think there's a lot to Justin Fields. I wasn't always a fan, but I became a much bigger fan late last year, especially in that Clemson game. But one of the things Cooley does is Cooley doesn't watch highlights. He watches games, and he's able to find every bad moment to combine with the good moments. So you're going to hear his breakdown of Justin Fields coming up in about 15 minutes. But when we come back, the Philadelphia Eagles are in trouble, and they may.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
They may have supplanted Washington as the most dysfunctional NFC East franchise. More on that when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com, also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
New BetMGM customers can turn $1 into $100 when they bet on any Washington Nationals game. Sign up for the BetMGM app using my bonus code KevinS100. That's KevinS100. And if you bet $1 on any Nats game, you'll get $100 in free bets, even if your wager is a strikeout, meaning it loses. That's the kind of teammate BetMGM is. Discover their innovative parlay selection builders, daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and more. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com and use code KevinS100 to get $100 when you bet $1 on any Nationals game this season. Regardless of the outcome of your wager, only at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, an official sports betting partner of the Washington Nationals. This is a new customer offer. It's paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older, Virginia residents only. Please gamble responsibly. If you've got a gambling problem, call 1-888-532-3500. I always get a kick out of reading these BetMGM spots, which, by the way, offer opportunities that are just unheard of. Just understand that. Like, they are giving you money. They're handing you free money to bet with these promotions. So they're totally worth it. But at the end of each one of these, Brendan, when we say gambling problem, call, it's just funny how many times I will get a tweet at some point during the day. Hey, Sheehan, have you called that 1-888 number? No, I haven't. I don't consider myself to be problemed. Is that even a word? I wanted to read from a story in the Athletic, written by Shield, Kapedia, Bo Wolf, and Zach Berman, three of the Athletic writers that cover the NFL and cover the Eagles. The Eagles are in major, major dysfunctional territory. We're talking about Washington dysfunctional territory, Raiders, Browns, Jets. We're talking about some of the real low-level organizations of the last several years in the NFL, and yet the Eagles just won the Super Bowl, it seems like, yesterday. Now, of course, it wasn't yesterday, but it wasn't that long ago that Philadelphia won the Super Bowl for the first time in its franchise history. The Philadelphia Eagles, after the 2017 season, into February of 2018, they were the Super Bowl champions with that incredible win over New England. What's ironic is the next 2 years, not only did they make the playoffs, but they won a game. And they almost won two in their follow-up year in 2018. They went 9-7 that year. And there was Foles back in the postseason again for them. And they nearly went to New Orleans after beating Chicago. And they were within, you know, basically a drop pass away from advancing to the NFC Championship game in 2018. And then they were in the wild card round in which they lost their quarterback, Wentz, early in the game against Seattle and bowed out to the Seahawks in the wild card round after the 2019 season. And then you get a pandemic year, they go 4-11-1 and Doug Peterson is gone. Well, it's apparently really bad, and it would appear as if Doug Peterson isn't that upset that he's gone. I'm going to read through the first paragraph or two from this story in The Athletic. It starts this way. 4 weeks into the 2019 season, Doug Peterson sat down for his scheduled inquisition. The Tuesday tribunals with team owner Jeffrey Lurie and general manager Howie Roseman were a weekly occurrence during Peterson's 5-year tenure as Eagles head coach. In the meetings, Lurie and Roseman questioned Peterson about all aspects of his game management the week prior. Fourth down decision-making, play calling, personnel choices, everything was on the table. Days earlier, the team had overcome a 10-0 second quarter deficit to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers 34-27 to even its record at 2-2. The offensive key to the win was a steady dose of the running game that took advantage of Green Bay's defensive game plan. Apparently, that wasn't good enough. Lurie, who has long advocated the use of analytics, wanted to know why Peterson hadn't called more passing plays. The interrogation was the same after another win that season, this time in Buffalo on a day with 23-mile-per-hour winds. Peterson was ridiculed and criticized for every decision, one source told The Athletic. If you won by three, it wasn't enough. If you lost on a last-second field goal, you're the worst coach in history. Following the season, Lurie wanted Peterson to get rid of offensive coordinator Mike Groh and wide receivers coach Carson Walsh. It wasn't the first time Peterson found himself on the opposite end of a disagreement with his bosses over his assistant coaches. After Peterson's first year as head coach, first year in 2016, he fought to keep then-offensive coordinator Frank Reich, pushing back against doubts from above. Peterson put his foot down again with Groh and Walsh, saying that he wanted both coaches to return. That's when Lurie reminded the coach who makes the final calls at their NovaCare complex. Peterson was given 24 hours to make the moves, according to multiple sources. If he didn't, he'd be fired. This is in 2019. Understand, they've won a Super Bowl. They nearly advanced to the NFC Championship game the year before. It is the following season, and he's got 24 hours to make these moves. A source close to Lurie says the owner never gave Peterson an ultimatum, but the next day the Eagles announced that both Groh and Walsh had been let go. A year later, it was Peterson who declined comment for this story. Lurie and Roseman also declined to participate in this story through a team spokesperson. 3 years after the Eagles captured their first Super Bowl in franchise history, the team finished in last place in the worst division in football. That was last year. Peterson's out of the NFL right now. Former franchise quarterback Carson Wentz is in Indianapolis. Lurie is more involved in all aspects of football operations than ever before and has kept Roseman by his side to usher in a new era with head coach Nick Sirianni, the fourth head coach in the GM's tenure. Over the past 2 months, the Athletic spoke to current and former Eagles staffers representing a cross-section of departments and viewpoints about the inner workings of the franchise. They were granted anonymity to be allowed to speak freely about sensitive topics, describing an environment characterized by second-guessing, paranoia, and lack of transparency. Basically, what you get from this story is that the owner wants to be involved in a lot of football decisions. A lot of them. Game day decisions. Game day decisions. Why did you run the ball so much? Why didn't you throw it more? Why did you go for this fourth down? Why did you go for two here? Meantime, the general manager, Howie Roseman, comes off as incredibly paranoid. Leaks are flying out of that organization, including for this particular story. He wanted to confiscate everybody's phone and start to look at phones to find out who the leak was. This is an organization right now that has amazingly gone from Super Bowl, playoff win near NFC Championship season, lost wild card game, and a game, by the way, if you recall the playoff game against Seattle after the 2019 season, that was a really close game. Carson Wentz got hurt, and 39-year-old Josh McCown came in and quarterbacked the Eagles, and they nearly got back into that game and won it. They lost 17-9. By the way, in that game, I'll never forget this game. I was so angry with Doug Peterson because he kept going for fourth downs instead of kicking field goals with a quarterback that wasn't really capable of converting some of the fourth downs. There were fourth and fives, fourth and sevens. And if he had just kicked field goals, there were like 2 to 3 drives they were in field goal range. They may have had a much better chance to win the game at the end. But they lost their starting quarterback, Wentz, in that game early. It was a concussion, right? I think it was a concussion in that game where he went out. And McCown came in and played pretty well, and they nearly pulled it off. And then this year was obviously it. And really, it concluded with the tap-out game against Washington. The Eagles right now, in terms of the football operation, are a bigger mess than the Washington football team situation. This is the first time you can say this about any other team in the division in 20 years. I know there have been moments with the Cowboys where you thought they were super dysfunctional, and there's no doubt that they have been at times, but not like it's been here. What's really interesting, I don't and have never heard that Snyder gets involved in game day decisions. The off-the-season, trying to make a marketing splash, trying to find the big-name players, you know, getting on, you know, Washington Football Team 1, Air Force 1, and flying it to the, you know, at 12:01 a.m. when we had free agency start that way to sign the big... That was what he was interested in. He was interested in what was best for the marketing of the football team. But he doesn't know enough about football, doesn't understand the game enough to really have any strong opinions about Jay Gruden's decision on 4th-and-3, or this year Ron Rivera's decision to go for two or not go for two against the Giants. Can you imagine our fan base if this kind of story came out? How do you, 2 years, really not even 2 years, a year after a second straight playoff trip following a Super Bowl win, a playoff trip, if you recall, that second year, they beat Chicago, who had the really good record. Who was the kicker in Chicago? The guy missed a field goal at the gun, and it was like 15-13, something like that. And then it was Eagles at Saints. Saints were a big favorite. Eagles are still the defending champs. The Eagles are up in that game going into the second half. They had a big-time chance to win that game, and when they were driving late with Nick Foles at quarterback, because remember, they lost once again that season. With Foles at quarterback, they were driving late, and I'm pretty sure it was Alshon Jeffrey who dropped what would have been a big play, would have put him into the red zone late in the game. I'd have to go back and remember. This is the way I'm remembering it. There was a big drop, though, by Alshon Jeffrey as the Eagles were driving for the go-ahead score late in that game. Late in that game. They could have been back into the NFC Championship game, and they would have been playing, I think, at Los Angeles. Maybe they would have been hosting Los Angeles. I think they would have hosted Los Angeles in that game. Can't remember. Yeah, here it is. My fault. It was a 2nd-and-10 at the New Orleans 27. 2 minutes to go in the game, down 20-14. Foles throws to Alshon Jeffrey. Jeffrey lets it go right through his hands, and it was intercepted by Lattimore to basically end the game. It was right in his hands, and he dropped it. It would have been a first down, you know, well inside, you know, the red zone, probably, you know, down towards like the New Orleans 15-yard line, and they would have been off to the NFC Championship game. The Eagles are a mess. There's a lot more from this story. I would urge you, if you're not an Athletic subscriber, you know, at least read the summaries of it. You know, almost everybody summarized it. But this is a franchise in big trouble. I mean, you've got an owner that wants to be super involved, literally in a micromanaging way, on, you know, off a game day. You've got a paranoid general manager, and now you've got this new coach. I have no idea what Nick Sirianni is going to be as a new coach. They've got a whole new staff, but it almost appears that in hiring Nick Sirianni, who came, by the way, from Indianapolis, where he was Frank Reich's offensive coordinator, where, by the way, Frank Reich has turned Indianapolis into a winner again because he's a really good coach, and, of course, ownership didn't see it. They wanted Reich fired. I have no idea what kind of coach Sirianni is going to be, but it really appears is if Sirianni right now, based on the situation in the organization, is a bit of a puppet. We'll see. They still, you know, Philadelphia still has some talent on that team. I don't know what Jalen Hurts is going to be as a quarterback. I have no idea what Jalen Hurts is going to be as a quarterback. I kind of like him. I like Sanders a lot. But defensively is where most of their good players are. They signed the safety from Minnesota, Anthony Harris. That's a year after signing Slay, and they still have, you know, debatably one of the top three or four defensive players in the game in Fletcher Cox. I don't think that's an exaggeration even now. All right. When we come back, you will hear what Cooley said about Justin Fields, his film breakdown of Justin Fields from my podcast yesterday. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com, also on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Here's what's trending on the Team 980.
The Wizards became the first team last night to beat Utah in Salt Lake City. 125-121 the final. Bradley Beal, 34. Westbrook had another triple-double, 25-14-14. That offset Donovan Mitchell's 42 points. The Wizards two back of the 10 seed now in the East at 20-33 overall. Well, it was a busy trade deadline in the NHL, and the Caps made a huge deal. They sent Verana and Panik, a first and second round pick in 2022, to Detroit for Anthony Mantha. Mantha's 26 years old. He's got 194 points, 95 goals, 99 assists in 305 career games. It's possible he could make his debut tonight against Philadelphia. Tariq El-Bashir, who covers the Capitals for The Athletic, will join us at 8 a.m. and we'll get the total breakdown of the Caps trade then. The Nats got some bats back in the lineup last night, and their offense came alive. 12 hits, 5 runs, and a 5-2 win over St. Louis. Soto, by the way, 3-for-4 with a walk and an RBI. Schwarber went 2-for-5 with an RBI in his Nats debut. Some NFL news. Julian Edelman announced his retirement last night via Twitter. Running back Gio Bernard, he's going to join Tampa Bay for next season. And Kevin James is going to play Sean Payton in an Adam Sandler-produced film, which you just described that film as being something about what Sean Payton did in his year off.
Yeah, apparently he coached or was an assistant coach on his son's sixth grade football team. And the script was produced, and I guess his daughter came up with the idea for the movie. Sean Payton's daughter came up with the idea, and Adam Sandler and Kevin James hopped on board.
I like Kevin James a lot. I loved him in the movie The Dilemma. I loved him in Grown Ups. He was great in Grown Ups. But the movie The Dilemma is one of the more underrated movies with Vince Vaughn and Winona Ryder and Jennifer Connelly, who's gorgeous. That movie cracks me up. And if you're a gambler, there's some great scenes with Channing Tatum, who plays and acts as if he is Vince Vaughn's bookie. Great movie. Cooley joined me on my podcast yesterday. You can listen to my podcast anywhere you get a podcast, and you can also just go right to my website, thekevinsheehanshow.com. And Cooley's doing, he's in the midst of doing a lot of film breakdowns in advance of the NFL draft, and he has started off, you know, basically doing quarterbacks. He's going to do the top-level quarterbacks, and then he's going to do the second-tier quarterbacks as well. I played for you yesterday part of what he said about Trey Lance. He liked Trey Lance out of North Dakota State. He really likes Trey Lance. You know, it's funny, I got home yesterday afternoon, and my son goes, I was just listening to what Cooley said about Trey Lance, and he goes, I was watching videos. My God, he's much bigger than anybody really thinks. He is a big, strong dude. He really is. There's a lot to be excited about if you're if you're thinking that Washington's actually interested in Trey Lance and may make a play for him. I still question whether or not you can really learn enough from essentially 17 starts at the FCS level. Anyway, this was Cooley yesterday with his film breakdown of Justin Fields. And I want to just give you one heads up because Brendan and I like Justin Fields. We watch a lot of college football. Cooley is not going through highlight reels. Understand that. He is going through full game tape and watching. So he's getting all of the bad plays for you guys that are just on YouTube watching highlights of these players. Here's what he said about Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields.
So here's what I've come to conclude after watching a lot of Ohio State film over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Quarterback said Ohio State, no decision is ever really the wrong decision. They're so good. They're so good. They just have so much talent at receiver. They did with Dwayne. They did with Fields last year. They had an exceptional back. You can make a decision that you'd prefer a different decision, but more times than not, it still ends up working out for them.
Right.
I think when I say that, though, I think that's a really hard step forward into the NFL. Because now the wrong a decision that isn't the preferred decision usually becomes the wrong decision. You don't get away with it anymore. And then a month into playing, you're saying to yourself, why is everyone beating on me?
Yeah.
I can ball. You can, but you're making the wrong decisions here. So with Justin Fields, there's a lot like Dwayne. There's a high completion percentage.
Super high.
Super high completion percentage. You're throwing open receivers a lot. And you're throwing to dudes that can make plays. So and he was. And he so is. And that's Jones. What it is at Ohio State. Like, it's not hard. It is not as hard. And it's different because you're playing some Big Ten teams that aren't SEC defenses. You're playing teams that don't have quite the talent on defense as some of the SEC defenses, where even if you're Clemson, sometimes it can be the wrong decision. There's some more speed back there. So as I go through this and look at Fields, let's start with the positives. And I thought this was really funny because I was reading some of the stuff on Fields. And like Kyle Shanahan, after his workout had a – or before his workout had a quote. Like, I'm sure when we see him in person, he's going to look like he throws the ball really well and he's going to be really fast. That's not what you want Kyle Shanahan to be saying.
What do you want him to be
saying?
That
he's going
to
look like he can throw the ball and that he's going to look really fast in a workout. I want Kyle Shanahan to go, look, I just want to see what I've seen on film, which is a incredibly quick decision maker, a process guy, a guy who can work the field. And then I want the traits to back up the mental side of it on the field. So here's what I saw, right? Okay. The positives, the dude can make plays. Let's not doubt that. And he make plays that other guys can't make. A screenplay breaks down, and he can run it for 10. You can't. There are no quarterbacks that can run it for 10 on a broken screen. That's a busted play, dude. And he can take off and make something out of that. He can make throws. Like, Fields can make some throws. And it's funny, as I go through this, like, I decided there are two kinds of holy throws. Like, holy, he made that throw. And then, holy, that's not a good throw. Like, there are two kinds of them. But he can make those wow throws. He does. And he makes them on the move. He makes them in the pocket. The deep ball stuff between 30 and 50 yards, I think you see some really good throws. I think you see some bad ones. But there's some stuff to that. He can process and he can see things. And there's anticipation at times. Where you go, I can see that he understands certain concepts. I can see that he sees and understands certain defenses. And he doesn't have to wait on it. But it also, we'll get to the negative where there's not a consistency to that. Talk about a guy, I think he's a pocket passer. I think he has the ability to stay in the pocket. I don't think that he's always looking to run. I think that he's comfortable back there in trying to read the field, which I like. So again, there's some stuff on that that I think is really positive. The negatives, or just in general, continuing. He's got this, like, he's a B as far as accuracy goes. He's not incredibly accurate. It's not as bad as what I saw with Dwayne at Ohio State, where he's missing a ton of underneath throws. Fields has got more touch than that. He can throw with different arm angles. He can, you know, kind of manipulate the ball where he wants to more than I think Dwayne could. But the negative of it, he's still got this long, delayed release that's not a consistent release, where sometimes he looks like he's shot putting it. Sometimes it's taking forever off that fifth step or that third step to get the ball out of his hand. And then it's almost like this relative accuracy. Like, he's going to throw it relatively close to the receiver more times than not. So it's in the radius where it's catchable, but it's really not catchable to run with the ball. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He's not a precise thrower of the football.
I'm surprised that you say that, but continue. I'll save my questions for...
No, you can find... No, here's the thing you can do, and this is the other strange thing with Fields. You can find moments and spans of time in different games where you can find him getting hot.
Yeah, definitely.
And being more accurate. But you can find too many examples of throwing the back hip on a flat route. And a tight end or receiver on the flat not being able to turn up, thrown behind on a bubble screen, and that guy not being able to move. A crosser hitting him down on the shin area instead of hitting him up in the chest where he can take and run. There's too many of those.
Okay.
And then there's way too many bad misses. I could put together a string of 20-plus bad misses.
Are they from the Northwestern and Indiana games?
They're from multiple games.
Okay.
There are a lot of games. There's bad misses against Florida Atlantic where you're like, whoa. And maybe in part, some of it is it really looks like a bad miss because a lot of times the dude's wide open. There's also deep shots where it's not even close. Like, and what's weird for me is you watch his pro day and that roll left bomb that he's throwing that hits a dot. Kev, he doesn't have an overpowering arm when you watch it in game. And he's loading up, and it's landing at 54 yards. It's effort. And you watch a guy like Aaron Rodgers, and fair enough, but that's the strongest arm, I think, one of the strongest arms in the league. Off balance, flick of the wrist, see ya, 60 yards in the air, no problem. Fields struggles to throw the ball over 50 yards. It's labor.
Really?
I'm just telling you that I can find more than 20 cuts of him really struggling or underthrowing or losing the ball inside on some of these things. So I don't think that he's like an explosive arm talent that it's just easy for him. I think it's laborsome for him to really throw the ball down the field. I see a guy that misses a lot of open receivers and it doesn't take a lot of open throws. And it's funny because I say no decision is the wrong decision. Like, I'm watching a play where he starts the set, and before he has to move right, he's got a seam route open down the middle of the field. And he doesn't take it. And then he evades pressure, rolls right, and he's got great speed, and he's got great quicks outside the pocket. And he makes a really good throw on the back shoulder of his receiver on the sideline to let him toe tap it and keep it in bounds. And you're like, we're going to nitpick the fact that he missed the wide open receiver in the timing of the play, but then we're also going to compliment the fact that he made an unbelievable off script play and had good accuracy to get it to that guy on the sideline. You know, there's a throw in the Penn State game where, and this is early in this game, where they have a hitch on the outside and then inside of it, one of those widened seam routes. And that's plays really replaced what everyone called smash, where you have a hitch in a corner. Now it's just a hitch in a seam route. And essentially he's reading the cornerback over the hitch. Does the corner come up and hold on that hitch? And if he does, man, you got a big shot on that inside seam. He has a big shot on an inside seam and he'll throw a hitch. Like, good, 6 yards. We're taking a completion. I understand it. You missed the 30-yard throw. And there's too many of these that I see.
Hmm.
There's also too much like, I need to see the route define itself and be open. Like, he needs to see the defense define itself, and he needs to see the route define itself. And if they don't, the picture's not quite there for him. Do I think that with time he could grow to where it is there? Absolutely. I think he is a smart player. Like that, I'm not going to suggest that he doesn't understand offense. He doesn't understand coverage. I think he does. I think he's just slow with processing right now.
It looks like in the red zone he's very decisive.
And yeah, I think there's moments in the red zone where he can be incredibly decisive. Like, I think he threw a seam route touchdown against Clemson in the red zone where it's like, bang, yeah, kind of sidearm throw, it's in there. Yeah. And so that's where I'm sitting here going, I know that when things play out the way it's supposed to, his timing's good. I think his timing is disrupted when it's not what he's seen. And that's normal. That's a guy that hasn't played as much. And he played some at Georgia before he transferred. But it hasn't been like 4 years of playing football and a certain scheme. And so it's weird. Like the traits, the physical traits, as far as athleticism is an A. As far as arm talent, I think arm talent's a B. Like, I do think he can throw the ball. I do think he can drive a ball. And I think he's got some touch on some of these things. But it's not – that ball isn't, like, zipping out of his hand. He's really got to throw it. And then one of the other things – and this is a thing that I think could be easily fixable. I think his drops and his feet are lazy. He's slow to get the ball out of his hand at times when it's just – like, you're in gun and you want to throw a – 8 yard speed out to the outside to the field. It's got to be 1-2-3 ball. It can't be 1-2-3. Pick up the speed, bro. This has got to be out. And so some of these throws look like they can get undercut, are late. He's late on a lot of the type of throws that he shouldn't be late on. And maybe it's processing, maybe it's feet need to pick up in the pocket. Maybe it's that long delayed release. All combined, it's sure all of them. He's an interesting guy to watch.
You don't love him though.
No, I don't think that other than his ability to move and run, I don't think that anything's elite. I don't think he does anything great. But he can. Right?
I mean,
he can make those elite plays. He can make those elite throws. He can read concepts, but there are way, way too many examples that show me that he struggles with it.
So
I think he's like, other than pure athleticism, it's like B, 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 B.
That was Cooley from my podcast. It continued for another 15 or 20 minutes with me firing off questions because I like Fields a little bit. I thought his arm strength and his discussion of his arm strength was a little bit off, but Cooley watches every single play as he breaks it down. And the funny thing, Brendan, about Cooley in these film breakdowns is I tend to be able to read what he really – many times he's very direct, and other times he has a really strong feeling, but at the same time he sees something there with a guy that, you know, potentially could prove him wrong. And I think that's where he is with Fields. Like, his gut is he wouldn't take him. His gut is that he would not take Justin Fields, you know, before the second round. Even though, because of the position, you know, a late first rounder on Fields, maybe. But at the same time, there's enough there. Unlike with Haskins, if you recall, Cooley was really, really adamant that Dwayne Haskins was a second round talent at best, and that he would not be a good fit for almost anybody. And he thought he had huge, huge bust potential. That's not what he's saying about Justin Fields. There's definitely a different tone that I'm getting with him on Fields, but there is no doubt that he likes Trey Lance a lot more than Fields. Now, he's going to do Mac Jones and Zach Wilson coming up. He's not going to do Lawrence because he's like, what's the point? Lawrence is going one and Wilson's going two. He likes Lawrence a lot, although he thinks Lawrence is prone to some bad throws. And then he's going to break down Trask and Mond and Newman and some of the guys that could be there for teams like Washington in the second, you know, or third round. But I thought it was interesting because some of the things he said about Fields isn't necessarily what I thought. Dwayne coming out of college, you could see against really good defensive teams that pressured him, there was a problem. The ball was high. The ball came out, you know, inaccurately. Fields is just a much better playmaker. But it is an interesting point that he makes about the completion percentages. You cannot get wrapped up into completion percentages at the college level. And actually, as I say that, you know what's funny? Is Josh Allen, remember, had a very low completion percentage at Wyoming, and people were killing him for it. As it turns out, he's going to be, you know, an incredible star of that class. I mean, that was supposedly the issue. Oh, he's got, if he doesn't have a high completion percentage at Wyoming in college, he can't possibly have a high completion percentage in the NFL. And it took him a couple of years. But at places like Ohio State and Alabama, to Cooley's point, people are wide open all the time. You cannot get caught up in completion percentage discussion. Anyway, what'd you think?
I'm a little surprised. I can understand why, like, there are questions about Fields, but we've also seen him going against the best defenses in the country. Like
Clemson.
Yeah, and Michigan. The Big Ten defenses were better this year than the ACC defenses on a whole.
And the SEC defenses, you mean?
Well, the SEC too. I mean, there are some defenses in the SEC.
Well, he made the comment that the SEC, he didn't get to play against SEC defenses. And the SEC typically has great defenses. This year, Alabama stunk. Florida stunk. Northwestern had a great defense this year. It may have been the best defensive team they faced all year.
Yeah. I think Clemson's defense was probably better, but also Northwestern's was a top 10 defense. Indiana had a decent defense, not a great defense, but still better than some of the ones in the SEC this year. So, yeah. I get the questions. I understand all of that. It's just, it's hard for me to unsee what he did against Clemson and not think you can project what that is. If you get that more consistently, you can make that a star.
He talked about one of the touchdown throws in that game being just lucky. It was the throw to the tight end that gave him, I think it tied it up at 14 in that game. He said, total wrong read. You know, the throw was accurate, but it was the wrong read. I see the biggest disagreement that I would have with Cooley is I don't think he labors to throw the deep ball. I think he throws a great deep ball, and it's an accurate deep ball more times than not. Up next, if you want to listen to the rest of it, it went on for another 20, 25 minutes, and we talked about a number of things draft-related. You can just get my podcast anywhere you get a podcast. Kurt Badenhausen writes for Sportico. He wrote a story yesterday that appeared on Yahoo and other places about the value of Hideki Matsuyama's win at the Masters. He will be our guest next. Chris Russell at 7:30. Tarik El-Bashir here at 8 a.m.